If I can have your attention. Hello. Thank you for being here. It is now January 28th. It is 5:31, and this is the regular session of the Gunnison City Council held at 201 West Virginia in the Council Chambers of City Hall. First and foremost, do we have any individuals who are not scheduled who want to have 3 minutes before council as an unscheduled citizen? Okay. That makes life shorter. All right. Next up, pre-scheduled, we have the group who traveled to Majakali, India, our sister city. And how do you want to begin?
So I'll start.
Please introduce yourselves.
Yeah. My name's Dr. John Hausdorfer.
If you could sign in, John.
Yeah.
Thanks.
We require you to sign in. It's sort of like, you know, sign against in. My line.
The Dean of the School of Environment and Sustainability at Western, and proud leader of a group of students over 4 years who have built a really unique sister cities international friendship with Majakali, India. And we really want to thank City Council members past and present for their support. The Mayor Gowitt in offering guidance and vision for a really unique version of a Sister Cities friendship. Sister Cities International goes back to 1956, founded by President Eisenhower. There are currently 2,000 Sister Cities relationships based in 500 different American cities. Some have obviously more than one partnership. Mayor Gowitz and I met with one of our students, Jillian Steininger, today about maybe reaching out to a community in Panama as a second sister city. And we do two things that are very unique from the point of view of Sister Cities International. One is that, according to the leadership that Mayor Gowitz and I met at their international conference, this is the first example they've seen of a from the ground up, built from scratch relationship created by students, and really in many ways run by students. We have master and environmental management students who set roots there for 1 to 5 months a year to complete projects for the Majakali India community while researching that community's needs from the partnership with us. And we have one class per year of about 10 to 15 students who travel with a number of professors to learn with the people of Majakali for a month. And this group of students who are going to present today have just returned. The second thing I think makes us a really unique Sister Cities partnership is it's rooted in what we hold in common geographically. Majakali, India looks out on the Himalayas, similarly to how we look out at Uncompahgre. We're both headwaters communities. We're both facing issues ranging from forest fires, ecotourism, to grazing. As well as reduced snowpack and stream flows. And so here we are on exact opposite sides of the planet, right? In solidarity as mountain communities, trying to learn from each other on how to live well and continue our way of life in the headwaters as they're challenged by various global issues. And it's led by the wisdom of the next generation, the students you're gonna hear from tonight. And so their mission is kind of, I mean, imagine taking a college class with five professors on the other side of the world, and you're an emissary of the mayor who sent you to research how to advance the relationship. And so the first group is going to talk about an elementary education partnership between teachers and students on each side of the globe.
John, do we need to move a few chairs up? Or is it?
Would you like from the walk up one at a time, or do you want like a panel?
Whatever is more
however
comfortable for you.
You got it worked out.
We'll do one at a time. It's more dramatic.
All right. Hello. My name is Annie Cottingham. Like John said, I'm here with the Elementary Education Partnership. AJ Alvarado, she's over there. She is my partner with this project. And she was here last time and talked about our goals. So now I'm here to share our achievements and future hopes with this partnership. So I want to talk a little about our achievements. Coming out of this project, we successfully started a pen pal relationship between Gunnison and Majakali. One of our hopes for this relationship is that it becomes self-sustaining in the sense that it won't need us or other students in the future to keep it going. teachers and elementary students can keep it going on their own, and it already seems like that's how it's going. Randy Foster is one of the third grade teachers at the Gunnison Schools. She's already sending another batch of letters to Majakali. I think she already did it, so it's going to continue to happen. Another achievement is that we have made strong connections with the teachers here in Gunnison and Majakali, which will be incredibly helpful for the future students. Now that we are back, we are looking onto the future and how we can help make the transition easier for future students by passing our knowledge onto the next students, and also by continuing to have strong connections with the schools and teachers. We hope to further develop the Sister Cities relationship by doing those things, and we have high hopes for future students and projects. I just want to thank Randy Foster, Renee Brecky, the Gunnison teachers for being so accommodating and open to our ideas. They helped so much with us, and I also want to thank all of you for being here and supporting all of our projects. It's been amazing.
And you could just sign in.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Next slide, please, Dad. Great. I believe Lily is our next speaker. She's going to talk about, I mentioned some of the things we hold in common with Montecali in terms of tourism, or grazing, or fire, or water issues, but also small business development is an area in which we can really learn from each other. Lily's going to talk about that.
Hello, everybody. My name is Lillian Barron, as John just introduced me. And I just want to talk a little bit about our goals, what our goals were before we went, and what we achieved. So in the beginning, in Montecali, there are some producers that gave products to the Bookworm and the Gunnison Gallery, both which were kind of informal transactions. A few professors of ours went there or bought a few things and then brought them back for these businesses to try out. what we really wanted to focus on was to formalize a sustainable business relationship for Umong and Hillcraft in Majakali and the Bookworm here in Gunnison, Gunnison Gallery here, and also Treads and Threads. So during our stay in Majakali, we got to talk to Umong and Hillcraft quite extensively, and they are not only willing and ready, but super, super excited about this relationship. They are ready to get a sustainable business interaction between the two cities. Umong specifically is not an exporter, so they do not have an exporting license, but because of this relationship, the sister city relationship, they are willing to look into different ways where they can either obtain an exporting license or figure out a obtuse way of getting goods to us. Hillcraft specifically is an export-only business, and so they were very excited about us. They were both businesses were very open to designing specific products for Gunnison. They were very willing and open to work with the stakeholders here, so that was very interesting. So what we accomplished at the end of it is what I kind of like to call goods and gunnisons for dummies. So what we essentially did was we created this this folder binder of ways where we can pass it on to the next group of people, and they will be able to take that information that we learned and hopefully further this relationship. I think last time I checked in at Treads and Threads, they have a display featuring the Sister Cities relationship and the Umong and Hillcraft goods that we provided for them, and they have been selling well, according to Kelly. And yeah, I think that our work that we did was the next step in creating a sustainable relationship, and both stakeholders here and in Majakali are ready to push forward.
Anyways.
Thank you, Lil. And actually, the sweater I'm wearing comes from Umong, and Hillcraft and Umong together employ about 3,500 women in the mountain rural areas
around Machicali, and it's a great example of microfinance at work. So I think we have a lot to learn from each other. Our next group is going to talk about some sort of symbolic structure here in Gunnison to represent and educate the community on the relationship. You may have seen sister cities examples in cities across the country, so we're trying to figure out what would work for Gunnison. So there's a group led by Kayla here who has a recommendation for you.
And I'm speaking on behalf of my group, which includes Shane Tulp and Dylan Wood. Our objective as a group was to come up with a physical space which could represent the city's sister cities partnership here in Gunnison. And as a Mountain Sister City ambassador or an emissary to the mayor here, we ended up listening mostly, which is what you wanted us to do. So, I think I can speak for all of us when I say that we met people and we heard stories that are inspiring us still today. And as community members of a headwaters town, we understand the importance of water as a resource. And as each of us experienced what it was like to go and collect water from a hand pump each morning for our host families, we got to think about that resource even more each day. And we are proposing a manually operated hand pump to be installed behind Mountaineer Bowl at the new Signal Peak trailhead. And we think that the people that would be able to use this would be trail users, event attendees, and tourists looking to fill containers for camping and recreation. The timeline that we had pitched originally was for this hand pump to be usable by August of 2020, but we are fortunate to have an ENBS 400 class to take over this project. And we believe that pumping water in this way would bring a mindfulness to water usage, and with an informational plaque nearby, create an educational opportunity for people to know about the sister city's relationship. Thank you.
Thank you, Kayla. Thank you, Kayla. And it's nice that it's not just a physical symbol, right? It's a symbol also thinking about what people were asking from the world to live in place, beautiful places like this, right? The physical symbol that City of Gunnison matched the School of ENVS on creating for the community of Machicali, which is a nice plaque, a water station for the people of Machicali, and a little kind of an amphitheater made of rock that last year's students helped make. It created an interesting learning opportunity in which their temple committee, right, which would be a subcommittee of their city, had to face a state that wanted to put in a major highway through there. And they negotiated with the state to actually get 3 times more land for a better connection from amphitheater to water to temple, getting at the sacred nature of water, creating a nicer gathering space. And so we got there, and to our surprise, the amphitheater we had created had been kind of taken apart, but very deliberately and carefully, with the rock and the slate stacked up, the nice little plaque from us cared for, and it's just waiting for that land transfer to happen. And we talked with the architect who actually was the designer of Mr. Tata's house, which I think is the richest man in India. He's donating his labor and his mind to create a really beautiful new version of that, of what we created on 3 times more land. And we're hoping next year's class that goes to India can complete that. It was a great learning opportunity for people, you know, at the undergraduate age, to sit down with the temple committee representing their own mayor, faced with what looked like rubble at first, to figure out, how do I represent my city well in this moment? And they did an incredible job. And I think the outcome's going to be above and beyond what we had before. And the learning opportunity was just untouchable. So the final group's going to talk about exchange. How do we get people from each community to go back and forth, not just Western students going there? And we have Emma to speak to that.
Hi,
Hi, everybody. My name is Emma Brophy, and Jake Taylor and I were representatives for the Student Exchange Group. Our mission was to return from Oshkali with information on how to create a student exchange program. Before India, we met with Jillian Steiniger, who has been working on many of these projects, to establish what information had already been gathered and what more we needed to discover. We came up with three goals, as you can see up there. These goals were to discover what documentation do Indian students have, where can we find funding and scholarships for Indian and U.S. students, and what would the curriculum for a student exchange program look like. We found that Indian students have birth certificates and social security cards, and that it is relatively easy and cheap to get passports, especially if a travel agent is helping the families. When talking with Knowles India, we talked about grant options and local sponsorship programs that we could set up in order to create funding and scholarships for students on both sides of the world. When it came to curriculum, however, we discovered our biggest problem and boundary. But although the excitement for an exchange program is there in both cities, there is still a lot of nervousness and distrust between the cities, and that the best thing we can do for an exchange program is to continue to grow our relationship between Moshkali and Gunnison. And through all these different projects that we presented today, we are doing that, and every year we are making strides towards this goal. And thank you for listening to all of our different projects, and hopefully a student exchange program will be possible in the future. Lastly, we have met with returning students to pass along our information and have created a list of contacts willing to assist in an exchange program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Emma. And just in conclusion, I just want to express my gratitude to you all. Not every city council would have this much faith in a group of students. I mean, they have connected everything from school children to business leaders to mayors to professors, to organizational leaders, to build a really exciting international relationship during a time of crisis for mountain communities around the world. And so I want to express my gratitude to you, Karen Hausdorfer, Rachel Weakland, Brandon McNamara, and Ajay Rastogi, who are my kind of teaching staff. They were phenomenal, but at the end of the day, it's the students. You know, the 2018 group, this year's group from the fall, the students coming up next summer and fall are going to continue this for you on your behalf. And to the extent that you believe in and support these students, you can create a sister cities example that many sister cities partners that are across the country are starting to look to. So thanks for your support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again. Thank you for sharing. Look forward to future activities. At this time, next item is the public service and economic development grants. We have that, and Russ?
I'll turn it over to Ben.
Sure.
We've got a couple people that would like to present.
So as just a quick recap for those in the audience, in the packets are included the preliminary grant awards that you determined during your January 14th work session. And thank you for all your dedication on making those difficult decisions as we had a shortage of $102,000 in the public service grants and $19,000 in the economic development grants. So I know that's a difficult decision to make, as they're all worthy projects and services that are proposed in front of you. You did have some questions from two applicants, and I believe we do have representatives present here tonight, and maybe we could just invite those if the council would like to see that. So, Carrie, maybe if you can come up and share with us.
And Alyssa is here tonight. Thank you for having us. I'm Carrie Comerford, and I'm the Director of Juvenile Services and GCSAP.
And I'm Alyssa Ware. I'm a Gunnison local. I'm also a youth advisor for GCSAP, and I'm also a student at Western.
So we wanted just to talk a little bit about the change and the request for this year with facilitating the Gunny Hangouts and some lessons learned. And I think it's important to start out with really discussing the why, and that as individuals and as organizations, when we understand the why behind why and what we do, it deepens the work that we do and the impact across the community. And GCSEP and Juvenile Services really has gotten to a point in which we understand why we do prevention and why substance abuse and suicide prevention is important for the youth and the adults in our community. This year we've delved into some environmental scan and gaps analysis across the community about what we currently have for substance abuse prevention, treatment, and recovery options across the lifespan. And even though Gunnison County Substance Abuse Prevention and Juvenile Services has largely focused on youth, this opportunity has allowed us to also look at what services are there for adults, because as we've talked about over and over, our youth are only as healthy as our adults. So when you understand the why, it also makes the work much more impactful and difficult. And really, I think where we are is really understanding the outcomes that we want, not just the output. So not just the number of people who participate in programming, but the actual change and the goal of youth space and sources of strength really is to increase connectedness and belonging, provide safe and sober events for youth, and extending that into adults, which is what we're hearing from our population, is that we need opportunities for families to recreate that are substance-free, that promote family values. And really needing to take time to understand what does that connectedness look like for youth. That this program, and I truly believe that youth need to drive their work, and that youth initiative should be driven by youth. I did hear the Youth City student leadership present to City Council about some of their ideas. And I think as an organized youth group, that really they should be heard, and as an organized body who has dedicated time in school, opportunity to have funding to be able to provide some programming. I also think that some of that programming doesn't hit all of the youth, that there are youth who do not participate in school functions, and events like the arcade and other events that get more of the non-traditional youth participating are really important, so making sure that we keep that in mind. Alyssa's gonna talk about the Sources of Strength initiative.
So Sources of Strength, it's a way to increase connectedness, if you guys aren't familiar with that. It's a very upstream prevention method, and it is very youth-focused. It's run by youth, and with the increase of like non-traditional students that I think the high school is experiencing through concurrent enrollment students, like I was myself, the increase in like online classes that they're experiencing, and the increase of like kids taking off periods, I think this youth-led initiative is something that really needs to be focused on. When youth are connected, there is a bond that is not felt in outside communities, and I think that's something we're experiencing really, really strongly in Sources right now. Our middle school Sources of Strength group is a very, very strong group. They are out there, they are ready, they are committed. Our college Sources of Strength group, which is very few in the country, not very many universities have a Sources of Strength group, is also growing, also very strong. It has a very strong belief in the students involved and a belief in each other. That is also teaming up with outside community events such as the Out of the Darkness Walk in order to get Western students out in the community as well. Our high school is kind of in a little bit of an influx right now, just with where they stand on this issue, but with the increase of concurrent enrollment students and more bonds into the community with high school like work study programs, they are slowly gaining more traction in that area. And with this funding, we will have more opportunities to create stronger bonds through the middle school, high school, university, and community levels.
Any questions for us about any of the programs or outcomes? The new Healthy Kids Colorado survey data, the surveys were administered in the fall, so we'll have the data in May. And then we'll also replicate the community survey and compile all that together to do the new risk and protective factors data, which should be done in the summer or early fall of next year in order to look at some of the outcome. But I do think as the director of the department and the program, we want to be impactful. So really making sure that we're impactful to the community and to the students and also fiscally responsible. So making sure that we have a good understanding of what the youth are wanting and needing. And then being able to modify that if needed. We've been conducting focus groups with youth in the north end, south end of the valley. There's a lot of mental health needs coming up with youth that we're working on across the community and our organization and many other organizations to increase access for youth for mental health services. That's something that, you know, is tied to this, but I think direct service also is something that needs to be looked at. And really starting with early childhood and addressing the needs from that basic level of childhood all the way through to adulthood and supporting the community across.
I guess one of the issues that you mentioned, and it certainly is not unique to Gunnison or any place else, is you have individuals who are very active for a while and they sort of keep that program going and then they graduate or find other interests, and so it looks like that in part one of the issues that hopefully you're addressing and maybe you can is how to make that more sustainable in terms of their involvement and getting it large enough so that it's not individual centric.
Yeah, absolutely. And prevention science would say that you need about 5 years. So most of the larger grants that are focused on behavior outcomes need time in which you know you're going to be sustainable to put the amount of efforts that are needed in order to ensure that type of sustainability, not just fiscal sustainability, but also buy-in from community stakeholders, buy-in from youth, buy-in from teachers, coaches, and other individuals who are important parts of their lives. So I think that's something that, you know, we've had a lot of conversations of how do you allow for the changing of the culture of the youth while at the same time continuing buy-in across time, and that is a really good question.
Yeah.
I don't know that we know the answer.
This is coming up on your fourth year, am I right?
This is the third year.
I would just like to add that I think that's something that Sources is doing very, very strongly. We have college Sources members that are working with high school Sources members, so it's building a connection between which is still youth, but it's bonding the university with middle school and high school as well as outside community sources.
And next year, those eighth graders that are really strong and the middle school will be freshmen. So you see that over time, too, with crossing it. But I do just want to reiterate that if there are youth that are already organized who have programming opportunities or needs, that I do think that funds should be dedicated to that. And then also keep an eye on making sure that it's represented across the community and that there are also other programs that really, again, not focused on the number of people who attend, but the change that you want to see with building connectedness.
Thank you both for being here.
Yeah.
It's great to learn more about the program. One of the items that we discussed, and I'm personally curious on, is the status of the Gunny Hangouts. You mentioned it, Carrie, and it was a topic of discussion for us during the decision-making process, and we're just kind of curious to know what the status is, We had some feedback from Youth City Council, which was really helpful, but your perspective would be appreciated.
Yeah, that's what I wrote in, was that we've tried two different models of that program with the goal of community space, which is any space that's physical or emotional where youth can engage in positive, safe activities that really foster authentic relationship. And as the beginning of the program, we really wanted it to be youth-driven and hire youth to take on that program and create some branding and marketing and coming up with ideas. And as an outside organization going into the school, we found that to be very difficult in terms of having quality time, more than 15 or 20 minutes in which to have those meetings. We find that we often hear that there's not a lot to do, we need more things, but we're so scheduled that we don't have time to commit to it outside of that school. So then the second year we modified it in order to try to meet that demand a little bit better, and had one of the teachers who used to work for GCSEP doing some prevention be that key lead, and then had representation across the grades. And even in that format of being in the school as not a designated club or having a designated time in the school, and having them fill out time cards to make sure that they're compensated, which is a really important piece. Anytime that we ask youth to do the work, they should be compensated just as outside organizations are. But just, you know, not really having time, or I think some of that buy-in. I don't know if that's the different dynamics of leadership or the youth who are involved, or what, but it is something that is seen across other communities in which organizations in the community that are largely adults are wanting to engage youth and have youth drive programming. When you have it, you have it, and when you don't know why. And sometimes it's the mix of individuals or a pressing issue that happens in the community, which I think is probably why our Sources of Strength program really has continued strongly, as it was in response to youth saying we need some skills and we want to be youth-driven in addressing suicide prevention because of the losses that we had. And that isn't necessarily the case with Gummy Hangouts. It was more of there's nothing to do, and as a city and as a community organizing, work with youth, wanting to help fill that need and that gap. So even though it's designed to be youth-led, I think in part because it wasn't youth-identified, might be part of that. I think right now what we're seeing in our community as well as in JP County is youth are identifying mental health access as a need, and therefore then wanting to put efforts themselves towards that and drive it. So I think you should listen.
Mr. Mayor, just wondered if I could follow up. So Carrie, given what we've learned, how would you propose redeploying the money that is being requested?
I think it's important to continue to have a couple of events that are larger community sort of sober events, like the arcade nights that had been put on. The last one, even though there was conflict with some high school events, there were 50 middle schoolers, 40 high schoolers, 45 university students, 360 community members, and 22 adults for a sober event. So I think it is important to use some funds to put on something in the community that we don't have like that a couple of different times. But I think that I think taking time to listen to the youth in some of these focus groups, I think making sure that individuals who want access to health services, whether that's a therapist or a peer support specialist or counselors, or I think that's important if we're hearing, which we are up and down the valley, that is a need, that we should listen to them. And just think that a lot of efforts are focused on high school, and that's not upstream prevention. That is looking at after years of behavior or years of adversity. And even though we see it from an adult lens as being pretty upstream, middle school and elementary school and early childhood starting, that's where we're looking at prevention of suicide, of bullying, of substance abuse, is making sure that we're taking care of our youngest and that we're addressing the social emotional needs of our elementary and middle school, and that we're addressing those mental health and social emotional needs of our high schoolers, so that when they are at university, they're sitting up here talking to city council and feeling confident in doing that. That's not a very simple answer.
So more specifically, is it helping to pay for staff versus paying an offsetting cost for gunny hangouts? What you're proposing is there might be one or two events, but would the city be supporting staff positions?
I don't think so. I think that the work that we're doing at GCSF and the staff that we have, we can sustain and don't need assistance with that. I think that the better use of funds in that way is honestly having a couple events that are hitting across the community. So the arcade nights, maybe something similar in which engages individuals in a kind of similar way of gaming or something that's not outdoor recreation based is nice. And I think whether it is using funds in order to incentivize youth or focus groups in young adults, I think is also an important population. There's a format called People's Dinners in which you engage the community and having those discussions and really understanding, you know, what is needed, and if what is needed is this space in terms of emotional space, then I think that lends itself more to helping to provide access to services. That's something that we're speaking to the town of Crestview about, of creating a program in which youth, high school youth, are able to access free services for at least two sessions and mental health. And so I think honestly that you know, using the funds to provide those different activities, giving some of it to the youth who are already organized to create activities, and then taking time to really see how to best use those funds to meet the needs of the youth and maybe looking at access. We don't need help with staffing, I think, at this point in this format, and we'd like to see the money go to something that's going to be impactful.
Well, for me, it really clarifies a lot of what your program does. I was a little bit vague as far, and I think, you know, where the money was spent and how it was directed. The hangouts was important, and I guess I would like to have a little update maybe on how successful those go, maybe, and because I guess we heard a little bit about some disconnect there maybe on the hangouts seem, so to speak, and how successful that is, and you helped clarify that for me a bit tonight, but maybe a little bit more on that. I don't know if we could.
Yeah, and I think it's
a little update on that possibly.
And the, you know, in the multi-pronged approach, and that it's not just providing a program or an event, but really working with Mario's and MOCA's and other organizations so that they're youth friendly, meaning that they create an atmosphere in which youth feel that they're part of the community too, and that they belong, and that they're not being bothersome when they're hanging out there. And also,
and kids are showing up, and you gave us some numbers that,
yeah,
and that was great. Yeah, that was good.
And I think, you know, a larger piece of that is just the message that the community sends. And we'll continue to work on that through other efforts of a framework called Positive Youth Development, which is teaching organizations and community members who interface with youth reminding them about adolescent development and what it was like when we were your age, and really to just be supportive of having them in that space so that they feel connected and belonging. We started that with incentivizing businesses, and business folks no longer want incentives to stay open longer, to offer youth discounts in order to increase their participation or their access to the services. So I think that within itself says a lot about the community and its ability to support youth.
It can be an accepted place and kind of a cool place. I mean, good place to go.
Yeah, that belonging is important for substance and suicide prevention, so it's a really important piece.
And maybe when you collect your data sometime this summer, we can have an interim report and you can share the data and how things are proceeding. So
I think that would be great. Our staff is working with Alyssa and Charlotte to conduct monthly focus groups with Gunnison High School students as well on a multiple different topics. So I also know that in Crested Butte, when that's happening, there's one representative from City Council who has to be present during that. So if there's ever a desire to be kind of part of that process, or if there's specific questions that you'd like asked,
and I can't speak to our focus groups. We've had really good outcomes at them. We just had our first one during school time at the high school. And we have high schoolers from all areas of the high school, not just specifically athletes or specifically one club. We had a very diverse group. They were very honest. We talked to a few of them after, and they said the next time we have them, they want to be there. So our focus groups, I think they're going to be very, very strong. Our first one definitely was.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And next, I think we have Rich Stromberg with Cold Harbor. I'll pull up your
PowerPoint. I already signed you the first thing.
Yep.
Thank you, Rich.
All right. Thanks, everyone. City Council, Mayor, appreciate you inviting us to speak. My name is Rich Stromberg. I am the director of the ESS program at Cold Harbor Institute, and I'm on the board of directors. Next slide, please. The Cold Harbor Institute is a learning laboratory for regenerative living practices. They're a local nonprofit. Equitable Solar Solutions is a program of Cold Harbor that creates the greatest value with green solar equipment for those in the community with the greatest need. It was started a year ago by five capstone students in Dr. Kate Clark's Applied Sustainability class at Western Colorado University School of Environment and Sustainability, so a full year ago, next slide, please. Now we actually have a second group of capstone students, two of which are sitting here, Jack and Maddie, and then we also have a new fellowship, graduate fellowship student. So they're on the team. My experience is I have 22 years in the semiconductor industry as an engineer and manager. I was the State of Alaska Wind and Solar Energy Program Manager, working across the state on utility scale and community scale systems. And now I am still part-time research faculty with the University of Alaska, Alaska Center for Energy and Power, working on far north systems. And I am a lecturer mentor at the School of EMVS, working on the Renewable Energy Corps, so that's pretty much my background. And then we are working with a NAVSEP certified installer who is local here in town to actually oversee and make sure we're meeting code. I know the code, but we have to do the installs under a NAVSEP certified installer there. We have our graduate fellow here tonight, Sean, and then we also have all of our students have completed a 8-hour solar PV theory and hands-on workshop that's run on campus. And then we have several students are also graduates of Solar Energy and International's PV 101 202 courses. And then we still have ongoing support from some of our first-year founders that do marketing and solicit donations in both Salt Lake City and the Denver area. So next slide, please. We actually considered two different sites, primarily based on energy billing data that was provided by the city, looking at consumption. We looked at this building here. the main problem with this building that could take up to 5 kilowatts of solar based on the energy demand is that the flat membrane roof, we would have to put on a ballasted type mount structure. It's more costly, and also it's a low angle, and we don't have room to shed the snow. So we would have to have people shoveling frequently in the wintertime. Whereas then we looked at the Jorgensen ice rink and the little square on the diagram there, you can place that anywhere on the building that was convenient relative to the actual electrical service that comes into the facility. But the energy load, actually, you could put up to 197 kilowatts of solar PV before exceeding the annual energy load on that building. We're proposing a approximately 9 kilowatt system. Next slide, please. And so there's actually, in the official proposal, we've got the two different size array options, a proposed and then a reduced size, because we didn't know what your budget was, your interest level. So next slide. And I think there were concerns about operations and maintenance. The solar PV is actually very low on maintenance requirements and ongoing operation. We actually test electrically and through thermal imaging all of the incoming donated equipment before we assign that to a project. So there's an example. There's one of the modules. We have 40 just like this. If anyone wants to get up, take a close look to see what an 8-year-old module is that came off of a Bank of Colorado facility in Boulder that was donated to us. They sent us 44 panels. We rejected 4 of them that we wouldn't want to put on a rooftop system that we'll use for some other training purposes.
Any concerns about buying the used?
So we didn't know that. They donated to us, and then as a 501c3, we issued them a tax donation. So that gives them an incentive. But and then the modules come with 20 or 25 year warranty on the power output, and they average about 1% loss per year. And so the warranty is if they lose more power output than that, you can get a warranty return. But that's one thing that when we do the electrical test and we check against the spec, the actual outside temperature, the solar radiance at the time, and then we calculate, well, what is the percentage loss for the 8 years that these modules have been in service. Mm-hmm. And we have other modules that are older that are not being proposed for this project. But that's how we treat everything.
Yes. So can they actually wear out?
They lose about 1% a year. So after 25 years, they're still producing 75% power. So besides helping highly energy burdened people in the community, a side benefit is we would rather see these energy producing assets actually get placed in service and do more value. They're more valuable than getting the aluminum frame stripped off and recycled and junk in the rest of the module put in the landfill. So there's kind of multiple benefits there.
One last question. Sorry, on the warranty you mentioned, does that come with the donation?
So it's transferable on the modules from the manufacturer. Whoever owns the is the owner at the time can do that.
Thank you.
And then, so the main thing you need to do is monthly monitoring of your energy bills. You'll be able to see if the net meter is not showing power getting pushed back to the grid. You'll know something's wrong. I was up in Rumble a couple of years ago and looking at their arrays and walked up just to kind of inspect and noticed that the power inverter wasn't on. So that's odd. I kind of fiddled around and noticed that somebody had unscrewed the little fuse holder. So I plugged it back in and it powered back up and I let Ian Billett know. But it's like those little things that if no one's checking on a monthly basis, that's there's an option for clearing snow with a rubber roof rake and a long boom. If there's been significant snowfall, but the snow will melt and shed naturally, and that's another advantage of the ice rink, is it does, it's not steep, but it does have that south-sloping roof that will shed the snow. And then for dust and dirt, rain, natural rainfall will clear that. You don't have to get up and clean mm-hmm. those. They're very reliable systems, and I already talked about the module decline. Next slide. And that's all I had. So any other questions you have, I'm happy to answer.
Is it your intention then to transfer those modules essentially to the city once they are mounted and properly installed?
Correct. No, we would actually draw up a memorandum of understanding between Cold Harbor, the city, and then the recipient of the benefit would be Gunnison Valley Regional Housing Authority to additional funding for GB Heat, which pays for energy efficiency upgrades for low-income households. And one reason we like that is we could just do a monthly LEAP or LIHEAP, like pay off someone's bill for the month. But at the end of that money's gone, whereas if you pay for energy efficiency upgrades, the payback continues month after month after month. And so that's our preferred method.
Have you got an estimate of the amount and let's say the summertime that might be generated that would be available to GB Heat or not?
So I do have a table with that amount. There is a net present value included, I think, on two slides back, if you go back. Yeah, there's, no, actually, that one doesn't, but I do have a net present value, both the simple payback as well as I have a 20-year net present value, but realistically, every year, I also have another spreadsheet that does year-by-year net present value that's the most accurate, but it's, I would have to check the packet to see the exact number. It's on the order, the larger one is more than $12,000 in net present value to a GDRHU.
It can be significantly impacted.
Yes.
Once these run their lifespan, then is there any recyclable portion of it, or is it basically now a landfill problem?
Well, after 20 years, they're still going to be producing. There's modules here in the state that have been installed for 35, even 40 years, and they're still producing power. So my advice would be I wouldn't consider getting rid of a module until it was at least 50 years old. So it's a very long-living asset. It slowly declines on the output, but what's the labor to go over there, pull it off, versus let it keep making power?
What's the likelihood of a catastrophic failure of one of the panels?
Very low, and the typically what you see is like damage. If we were in a high hail location, that would be a concern. So Fort Collins, places like that, there's a greater concern for that. Although they're rated for 1-inch diameter hail, on the front passivation.
Well, I have purchased 30 panels of our previous house in Denver in the Lakewood area. Mm-hmm. Survived that big hailstorm, you know, 3 or 4 years ago that wiped out Collard Mills. I guess one of my concerns is with those 30 panels I had on a 612 roof, and I was out there raking them off in Denver all the time. Otherwise, I couldn't get them, they wouldn't clear by themselves. I'm worried about them just holding snow, especially in Gunnison where doesn't get above 30.
The module should still be heating up. I'm not sure what was going on with the orientation. I do know someone here in town that has a east-facing orientation of their array, and you get snow loading from the wind on the lee side, and that builds up more and it packs it in. Yeah. And so they have to get out. And it's certainly monitoring it for a season and seeing how well it self sheds would let us know, all right, do we need to get one of the rubber boom rakes to clear them from the ground?
How about the inverter? Is that a concern?
In the budget, we have several donated inverters, up like 16 kilowatts worth of donated inverters, but they're split phase 240, which works for a residential installation versus we need a three-phase inverter. So we would be in the budget, it's purchasing a new inverter. And the other thing to consider is that if you think there might be an opportunity for expansion at a later date, it costs much less than twice the cost to double the capacity of your inverter to plan for future expansion.
Rich, since we chatted, have you had a chance to talk with anybody at Parks and Rec about the building, structural issues, putting it on the building?
No, not yet. I wanted to kind of work that issue through.
I just suggest, Council, if this is something you're funding, you know, I would suggest, you know, it's subject to making sure physically we can do this on
really
this building.
Enforcement.
Yeah. We don't have any structural issues associated with it.
Any other questions?
Rich, curious, could you speak to the educational opportunities that would come with these panels for both the class and the community?
So it's more for the students involved in each installation. That's the primary value. The inverter will provide data that can be accessed from both the high school, although they have their own 1.5 kilowatt system. And we are talking to community schools about another project there. But that data is available, as well as we have other solar radiance data available for the schools to use. The labor is going to be primarily someone who is old enough to be covered by liability insurance. We can still use high school students to help on the ground, but you know, it have to be 18 year old to be up on the roof.
Great.
Exciting. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. I guess that deals with our request, correct, Ben?
Correct.
So, what is council's instructions at this point?
I'll make a motion to direct the finance director to prepare funding agreements according to the council funding awards. For the mayor's signature.
I second that.
Is that your second?
Yeah.
I second that.
Is there any other discussion? We will note the need to verify the structure of the roof on the one grant. Otherwise, all other grants can be released. Okay. Erica.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
Gelwix?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
So carried.
Okay. Next item of business is the minutes of January 14th.
To approve the minutes of the January 14th, 2020 regular session meeting.
Is there a second?
I would second that.
Okay. All right. Is there any additions, corrections? Hearing none, Erica.
Miles?
Yes.
Gelwix?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
So carried.
All right. Next is an appointment of a renewal appointment for Parks and Rec.
Is Chris, we do have one term that's available within the Parks and Rec committee. It's an at-large committee position. Christy's been holding that term previously. Sorry, a little echo.
We also had a resignation, Hank.
Correct, which is a city position. And Chrissy has reapplied. She's interested in serving again for another term on the Parks and Rec Committee. And your letter of interest is included in your packet as well. As Mr. Forrest just mentioned, we did have a resignation. Hank Ebbett has resigned, and his is a city position. And we're looking already starting to advertise that position as well, hoping to appoint a new member at the February 25th meeting.
We'd love to keep Christy on the staff.
What is the desire of council?
Any explanation for the new council members?
No, I
okay.
You
know,
yeah, I'm up to, I mean, I'm done
okay.
With that.
Yep.
Is that a motion to appoint her again?
Keep her on.
I think he was work.
Yeah. I'm not sure I was rookies out there.
All you need to do is move the appointment.
I move to appoint Kirsten Murtaugh to the PRAC board as presented.
I'll second that.
Been moved and seconded. No additional discussion. Erica.
Gelwix?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
So carried.
Next is the appointment of members to the Senior Advisory Committee.
Okay. So we also have the appointment for our new Senior Center Advisory Committee. It's a 7-person committee, and we received 10 applications for it. And you can see all of those letters of interest are included within your packet. For that initial membership, we were seeking members from certain groups within the community. And part of that is also is that we need 5 members from within the city limits and then 2 members from without or outside of the city limits. And then you can see from the memo there who all applied. I never did receive follow-up from Jody Coleman. Ended up submitting a letter of interest to me.
She called you, though.
She called. I'd spoken to her and said she was interested. I asked her to please send me a letter of interest on Friday afternoon, and I gave her my email address, and she didn't respond. So I called again to make sure that she got that correct and didn't respond, and then
so
I hadn't heard
from her.
She could possibly be.
Jody Casey,
excuse me, yes. Sorry. Jody Casey.
Which would be our 5th
city
resident.
The 5th city resident, correct. We need 5, correct.
So she didn't...
She didn't formally apply.
Okay.
I just have, from the phone conversation with her, said she was interested in participating, but she never did formally apply. So I could try again if that was the direction of council.
Okay, so we have 4...
You could
that
take
are
action
for the
tonight.
City at this moment, and one that's pending, since we don't have an actual application,
yep.
We need to get that. And I, like I said, I know that she spoke with me and said that she was interested, and so there may be something that happened in her family. And
sure. So if you want to... to appoint the 5 city members, or those that are living within the city limits, with Jody Casey pending, and then we'd need to make a decision
yes.
amongst the others for
yeah.
the final 2 positions.
Yeah.
And just as a reminder, a quorum is 4, Councillor?
I believe. I'm going to look up the resolution.
Yeah, I believe it is.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Well, the description...
So,
the description did call for diversity a little bit, and I mean...
For the initial round, and the word was encouraged, so it's not
encouraged.
A requirement.
Okay.
It's
not a requirement.
Okay.
4.
Yeah. So we're looking to nominate...
Yeah, so you can take action tonight, and we can continue to advertise for the 5th
okay.
city of Gunnison.
Or could we do it like was suggested, appoint all 5, depending if she gives us a letter?
You can do that.
Okay, if that's not, then we can advertise.
So.
Okay, could we set a deadline of when we received that letter of interest?
Yeah.
Maybe at the end of the week?
Yeah.
This Friday,
yeah.
January 31st?
So
okay.
If I could just make that a motion, is that good enough?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's for the 5 city members. Okay. Is there a second for that?
Second, yeah.
Okay.
Just for clarification, that 5th would be subject to receiving a letter by
by January 31st.
Now we have individuals in the room who are, let's see, Gail.
We do.
You're here. You're with the city. I don't see. But
there might be 3 people in the audience
you're in
that
the county,
are interested.
Right?
I'm in the county.
Yeah.
I do have one comment
yes.
about. And I don't know this person that lives in the city, this Jody Casey, but wasn't the deadline the 22nd and you didn't receive the call until the 24th?
That is, I spoke to her on the 24th.
Right. Does the deadline not mean anything, or how are we handling that?
We have always accepted additional applications when the position is vacant. Up until the time of council meeting, we have done that traditionally.
Okay, but you haven't received a letter.
We've received interest.
So verbally
with 2 different people. So now, if she does not have a letter, then we'll have to re-advertise and so forth. Okay.
But we have to have 5 from within the city limits.
Correct.
And so we only have 4 without her.
Mm-hmm.
With her, would be the 5th
And again, your options would be just appoint the four and keep up with the fifth, or,
right,
you know, again, where you haven't had competition for the position, mm-hmm, you've had that practice.
Mm-hmm. And the motion is to appoint four with a conditional on Jody Casey.
And if she doesn't, if we don't hear from her by Friday, then we'll advertise.
Yep.
For the fifth.
Okay.
Does that advertise mean that that committee will not be functioning until?
No, it'll function with a vacancy, just as Parks and Rec has a vacancy, even though we filled one of them tonight, or potentially. So there is a Parks and Rec vacancy, but the committee will still function. Okay. Council, Erica.
Plata?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
Gerwicks?
Yes. Okay. Now we have the harder choice of selecting two from five individuals, and I see Sharon is here, and who else is here?
No.
I think it's just Sharon in terms of applicant for.
Okay. We appreciate you being here, Chair, very much.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. How do we? We've read the letters, and it looks like, unless we have questions for Sharon, greatly appreciate you being here.
May I make a comment?
Certainly.
Having worked on the Groomers Board with both Joanne and Bill, I would like to say that Joanne's main concern about being on this advisory board is to make sure that the city does not take over the Inner Heart. Her concern is not so much growing the senior center, and she has made that verbally to many folks, whether that is important enough, but I know. And I also know that Bill is president of the Inner Heart, and he served well on the Boomers Board, but I also know his energy is taken up with part of those responsibilities that he has there.
Right. And if I remember the list of things that we sort of had interest in trying to obtain representation, Young at Hearts was one of them, as I recall.
And Gail is on the Young at Heart Board.
Yep,
as well.
And Gail is there, yes.
And Bill has been very active in, yep, in activities with the prior Boomers as,
yep,
well.
So, do we want to, all of us have read it, why don't we do sort of a straw poll and just sort of see if we have consensus. We may not, but hopefully we don't end up with all five. I will start. I think all five are qualified. I think that they bring different things to them. But at this point, my top choices are Kathy Elliott and Sharon Mills. Now, if you have, just go around, this is not a motion because I can't make motions, but do you have two that are sort of at the top of your list, Diego?
I had three.
Okay, you can put in three.
Yeah, and those were Kathy Elliott, Sharon Mills, and Bill. Weger.
Okay. Bo?
Well, I had Bill Weger, for starters, and Kathy Elliott. I thought all of them had, yeah, nice applications. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
Okay. We're just taking a straw poll.
Okay.
And Jim, who did you?
Kathy Elliott, Sharon Mills, and Bill, I don't know that much about him, but what I've heard and read,
so
the top two choices, Kathy and Sharon.
So, sounds like that Kathy is a consensus person. So, Sharon and Bill, anybody wish to advocate one over the other, or make a motion to appoint two people?
Sharon's always been before us. I've met Bill once, I think, so my top choice out of those two would be definitely Sharon.
Well, I did find Sharon's application. I did make note of, I'd like the quote at the bottom of that, that it was really a touching quote that she had.
I've thought about that a lot, too.
That won some kudos from me on that one. I like that. I wrote down love it.
I got to read it now.
Hey, give me a paddle here.
I'll make a motion to appoint Sharon Mills and Kathy Elliott.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All right. Any additional discussion? Erica.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
Gowix?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
So carried.
Congratulations, and assume that committee will have an organizational meeting sometime in the near future, with or without a seventh member being appointed.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dan? Do you need breaks?
Some people. Why don't we take a short break?
I just sensed.